Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a giant, Aristotle.
Yeah.
I mean, his influence is just everywhere, isn't it? From science to how we argue.
Absolutely. It's almost hard not to bump into his ideas, but yeah, the sheer amount he wrote can feel a bit daunting.
Right. So our mission here, for you listening, isn't just to list what Aristotle thought, but really to get a handle on how he thought, his whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And guiding us through this is Jonathan Barnes's introduction. It's fantastic for cutting through the academic jargon and showing the core structure.
It really is. And connecting this to the bigger picture, Aristotle's real genius making wasn't discovering one specific thing, but inventing the process of systematic thinking itself.
Like the toolbox.
Exactly. Logic, how to classify things, how to define them. These tools are still shaping pretty much every field of study. Understanding him is, like you said, a shortcut to the foundations of Western thought.
We hear the name all the time, but yeah, he basically wrote the first textbook on, well, reality. So let's talk about our guide, Jonathan Barnes. Who is he?
Okay, so Barnes is a major figure in ancient philosophy scholarship, really known for his analytical rigor. He was a professor at top places like Oxford and Geneva.
And he focused on treating these ancient guys as philosophers, not just historical artifacts.
Precisely. What makes his take so valuable, especially for Aristotle, is his work on the texts themselves. He actually edited the standard scholarly English version of the complete works.
Wow, okay. So he's not just reading translations. He's deciding how the English-speaking world reads Aristotle.
That's a big part of it. And Barnes really emphasizes that a lot of what we have from Aristotle isn't polished books, but more like lecture notes, fragments. Huh. So Barnes uses his background as a modern analytical philosopher to sort of reconstruct the arguments really clearly. He makes these dense ancient ideas feel surprisingly accessible, but without watering them down. He shows you the logic holding it all together.
And that coherence is key to Barnes's whole book, right? His main point.
Yes. He argues Aristotle wasn't just dabbling. He was the West's first true scientist, maybe. Not because all the science was correct, obviously.
Right. Physics has moved on a bit.
Just a bit. But because his approach was so systematic, Barnes insists all these different writings, physics, ethics, biology, politics, art, they're all parts of one huge unified project.
Okay. A single system. But what was the point of it all? Was it just knowledge for knowledge's sake?
That's the fascinating part. Barnes highlights. No, it wasn't just abstract. It had a really practical human goal. Aristotle was trying to solve two big problems, really.
Sure.
First, how do we understand the world using our reason and by looking carefully at it? Observation is key.
Okay.
And second, maybe even more important, how do we use that understanding to live well, to achieve what he called eudaimonia?
Ah, human flourishing. That term comes up a lot.
It's central. So the whole search for knowledge for Aristotle is ultimately about figuring out how to live the best possible human life.
And Barnes walks us through how Aristotle structured this quest. He basically created the first university curriculum by classifying knowledge.
Pretty much. He split everything into three main interconnected areas. You've got the theoretical sciences, things like physics, metaphysics. The goal there is truth, understanding how things are.
Just knowing.
Right. Then the practical sciences, ethics and politics. Those are about action, how we should behave, how to organize society.
Doing the right thing.
Exactly. And finally, the productive sciences, art, rhetoric, engineering, things aimed at making something useful or beautiful. But the key is, he saw them all as connected, all leading towards understanding what it means to be human and how to flourish.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics then. Where does Barnes say Aristotle starts? With logic.
Yes, logic first. Aristotle basically realized you couldn't do good philosophy or science or anything really without the right tool, so he invented it. Logic was the organon, the instrument you needed before you could tackle anything else.
The big invention within logic was the syllogism.
That was the game changer, yeah. Barnes really stresses this. We all know the all men are mortal, Socrates is a man. Example.
Therefore, Socrates is mortal. Got it.
But the genius wasn't the conclusion. It was the structure. It gave us the first method for, like, guaranteed proof if your starting points are right.
How so? What was so revolutionary about that structure?
Well, before Aristotle, arguments could be pretty messy. It just lists of claims. The syllogism provided rules. If your premises are true and the logical form is valid, then the conclusion has to be true. No wiggle room.
Ah, okay. It formalized reasoning.
Totally. It became the bedrock of rational argument in the West for, what, 2,000 years? Just fundamental.
Okay, so toolkit's cured with logic. Then he turns to the natural world, his physics.
And for him, physics meant studying anything that involves motion or change, which is, well, pretty much everything in nature.
So how did he explain change itself, things going from one state to another?
He came up with this really elegant distinction between potentiality and actuality. Think of an acorn, it's potentially an oak tree.
Okay.
Change is just the process of that potential becoming actual. The acorn growing is the actualization of its potential. Same for a block of marble potentially being a statue.
It makes sense. It's intuitive.
It is. And to explain why something changes or exists in the way it does, he gave us his famous four causes. Barnes presents this as Aristotle's complete toolkit for explanation.
Right. The four whys. Let's try an example.
Yeah.
Maybe building a house.
Perfect. So the material cause is what it's made of, the wood, bricks, concrete.
Yeah.
The formal cause is the design, the blueprint, the architect's plan, the form it takes.
Got it.
The efficient cause is the agent that built it, the builders, the construction company, the who or what made it happen.
Makes sense.
But then there's the big one, the one that's maybe most uniquely Aristotelian, the final cause, or telos.
Its purpose.
Exactly. Why does the house exist? To provide shelter, to be a home. Barnes argues that for Aristotle, understanding the purpose, the telos, even in natural things, is absolutely essential.
Okay, so purpose is key. Now we have to talk about Plato, his teacher. Barnes emphasizes a major break there, especially in metaphysics.
Oh, huge. This is where Aristotle really charts his own course. Remember, Plato thought ultimate reality wasn't here in this world. It was in perfect abstract forms, like the ideal chairness existing in some separate, transcendent realm.
Right, looking up for truth. So what did Aristotle do?
He basically said, nope. He grounded reality firmly back on Earth. For Aristotle, true reality, or substance, lies in the concrete, individual things we see and touch around us. This chair, that horse.
So the essence isn't separate.
It's in the thing itself. The chairness exists within all the particular chairs. It's not floating off somewhere else. This move from the transcendent to the immanent, the here and now, fundamentally shifted philosophy. It anchors his whole system in observable reality.
And that empirical grounding leads right into his practical stuff, ethics and politics.
Directly. Because if reality is here, then the good life has to be lived here. When Aristotle asks, what's the good life for a human? His answer to Tyle, eudaimonia. Flourishing isn't just about feeling happy, it's objective. It's about fulfilling your potential as a human being.
Okay, so how do you do that? How do you achieve eudaimonia?
Through virtue ethics. And Barnes clarifies this really well. Virtue isn't something you're born with or just decide to have one day, it's a habit. Habit is the key word.
Like practicing an instrument.
Exactly like that. You become a courageous person by consistently acting courageously in situations that call for it. You build character through repeated action.
Which brings us to the golden mean, that Fonis idea.
Right. Virtue for Aristotle is usually the midpoint, the sweet spot between two extremes, two vices.
So, like, courage is the mean.
Between cowardice, which is a deficiency of nerve, and recklessness, which is an excess of it, the virtue lies in the middle.
But Barnes points out it's not just simple mediocrity, right? It's relative.
Crucially, yes, the mean isn't the same for everyone or every situation. What's courageous for a firefighter running into a burning building is reckless for me trying to fix my toaster. Finding that right point requires practical wisdom phronesis, which itself is another virtue you have to cultivate through practice.
And he says you can't really cultivate these virtues alone. That connects to politics.
Absolutely inseparable for him. His famous line, man is by nature a political animal, zoon politikon.
What does it really mean, though?
It means we're inherently social creatures. We can only fully develop our potential, achieve that flourishing within a community, a polis or city-state. Ethics for the individual and politics for the community are two sides of the same coin. The state's job is to help citizens live well.
Wow, okay. Even his view on art fits into this system.
Yep, even art and aesthetics. He saw art as mimesis, which usually gets translated as imitation.
Like copying reality.
Sort of, but Barnes points out it's deeper than just surface copying. Art imitates reality to reveal something universal, some inward significance, not just the outward appearance. Ah.
Okay. And his analysis of tragedy in the Poetics is a prime example. He asks, what's the purpose of watching these often quite harrowing plays?
Yeah, why watch Oedipus? It's rough.
His answer is catharsis. It's a purging, or maybe a clarification of powerful emotions like pity and fear. By experiencing these safely through art, Barnes suggests Aristotle thought it made us, well, emotionally healthier and better citizens. It serves a function.
Okay, the sheer breadth is just incredible. One mind mapping out logic, nature, reality, ethics, politics, art. So pulling back, what are the big unifying themes Barnes wants us to see?
I think theme number one is definitely the unity of knowledge. Aristotle really saw all these different fields, logic, biology, ethics, as interconnected parts of one single grand project to understand reality and our place in it. The ultimate goal, that telos, connects everything.
That feels like a challenge to how we often think today with everything so specialized. It encourages you to connect the dots, right?
Totally. You can't fully grasp politics without ethics, or ethics without understanding human nature, which involves biology and so on. It's holistic. Okay, what's another key theme?
Theme two has to be the combination of empirical investigation and rational analysis. This is huge. Aristotle wasn't just an armchair speculator. He was out there looking. Barnes mentions his detailed biological dissections, his collection of different city constitutions.
So real data collection.
Yes. But then he combined that careful observation with rigorous systematic reasoning using the logic, the syllogism he'd developed.
Observation plus logic. That sounds, well, like the beginning of the scientific method.
It absolutely anticipates it. It's a powerful reminder that knowledge needs both grounding in reality and careful thinking, looking and structuring.
And the third big theme.
I'd say the practical purpose of philosophy. For Aristotle, this whole intellectual system wasn't just an academic game. It was designed to improve human life.
How so?
Well, logic training makes you think better. Ethics helps you flourish as an individual. Politics helps create better societies where flourishing is possible. Art contributes to emotional health. Philosophy, in this view, is really about preparing you to live well.
It's fundamentally practical. Okay, Barnes also highlights some really memorable lines from Aristotle that kind of encapsulate these ideas, right?
Definitely. These quotes really stick with you. The first one is right at the beginning of his Metaphysics. All men by nature desire to know.
Simple, but profound.
It really is. It says, curiosity, the drive to understand, isn't just a hobby. It's fundamental to being human. It's what fuels all inquiry.
Okay, what's another?
We mentioned it before, but it's crucial. Man is by nature a political animal.
Right, the social aspect.
Yeah, it emphasizes we can't reach our full potential in isolation. We need community, civic life, engagement with others.
And for ethics.
This one is so practical. Virtue is a habit.
Simple, direct.
And powerful. It means character isn't destiny, it's something you build. Through consistent effort, practice, doing the right things over and over, not just wishing you were good.
Okay, one more maybe, about art.
How about, the aim of art is to represent not the outward appearance of things, but their inward significance.
Getting at the deeper meaning.
Exactly. Art isn't just photography. It uses imitation to reveal universal truths about us, about the world.
So, bringing this all home, how can we actually use some of this Aristotelian thinking today? Let's start with that golden mean.
The golden mean is incredibly relevant. Think about something like a work-life balance. That's a constant struggle for many people.
For sure.
Okay, so the vice of excess might be workaholism, burning yourself out. The vice of deficiency might be laziness, neglecting your responsibilities.
Right.
The golden mean isn't some magic number of hours. It's about finding the right, appropriate balance for you in your situation, given your duties and capacities. It's finding that virtuous sweet spot between the extremes, and it requires that practical wisdom, that constant adjustment.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not mediocrity, it's appropriateness.
Precisely. And what about his rhetoric, his ideas on persuasion?
Still totally foundational. Anyone who needs to convince anyone of anything at a presentation, an email, a meeting, can use Aristotle's framework. Remember the three appeals? You need logos. The logical argument, the facts, the data. Does your case make sense? Then pathos. The emotional connection. Are you connecting with the audience's feelings, their values?
Crucial.
And finally, ethos. Your own credibility. Do people trust you? Do they see you as knowledgeable and having goodwill? Barnes shows Aristotle understood that you need a balance of all three to be truly persuasive. It's still the gold standard.
It absolutely is. You see it taught in business schools, law schools, everywhere.
So wrapping up, what was the biggest takeaway for you from diving into Barnes's take on Aristotle?
For me, it's probably the sheer audacity and coherence of the system. We tend to think of progress as replacing old ideas, and sure, Aristotle's physics or biology are outdated, but Barnes shows that the lasting contribution is the method.
The way of thinking.
Exactly. The systematic classification, the insistence on clear definitions, the demand for logical rigor combined with observation. That framework, that approach to tackling complex problems, that's the conceptual machinery we still fundamentally use today, even with totally different data.
Yeah, that's powerful. What stood out to me most, I think, was that constant connection Barnes draws between the individual and the community. The idea that ethics and politics are intertwined, that flourishing isn't just a private project.
Mm-hmm.
His whole philosophy seems aimed at not just understanding the world, but actively making it and ourselves within it better. It feels very purposeful, action-oriented.
A system for living well individually and together.
Well, we hope this deep dive into Barnes' analysis of Aristotle gives you, our listeners, a fresh perspective on this foundational thinker. Maybe a new appreciation for the architecture of systematic thought itself.
And perhaps some tools, like the golden mean or the rhetorical appeals, to apply in your own lives.
Definitely something to think about next time you're trying to find that balance.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.